Hello and welcome to this Investment Outlook and End of Year Wrap. Thank you for joining us. And as ever, thank you for investing with Milford. My name is Phil Morgan Rees and I'm Head of Wealth Management and Advice. And with me on the Milford sofa is Mark Riggle. Hi, Mark.
Good evening.
Mark is Portfolio Manager of a number of our funds and Head of our Centralized Dealing Desk. You probably recognize him from our many online communications and roadshows. Also with me on the sofa is Murray Harris.
Evening, Phil.
Hi, Murray. Murray is Head of KiwiSaver and Retail. And again, those of you who have their KiwiSavers with us will recognize him from our many online KiwiSaver live streams and roadshows. This is the last time we'll be broadcasting from this studio as our main office in Auckland has moved to 50 Albert Street. If you are coming to see us in the near future, you can find us at the new address at 50 Albert Street, and we look forward to future broadcasts from the new premises. Today, we're going to look at a quick summary of the year. We're going to tune our minds to the outlook, and Murray and I will ask you to think of a few things over summer. We'll start by covering off the following main issues. Top five for us are: one, inflation isn't beaten yet. What are the central banks doing about it? And what is the path for interest rate cuts from here? And where does that leave the markets in which your money's invested? Two, whilst the US economy has been strong, it's not the same picture everywhere, especially when we look at New Zealand. What's the near-term outlook and the impact on how we're investing your money? Three, at the end of the day, we spend money in New Zealand dollars. The currency has been falling like a stone since September. How have we navigated that? And how are we invested and what can we do about it? Four, the US election, thankfully, is over. Trump's America First policy, does that impact how we're invested and what can we do about it? And finally, returns over the past year have been great. Will it last? What's the next year look like? And where are we investing to deal with that outlook? But before we get into the topic matter, I need to tell you that none of what you'll hear is intended as financial advice. If you need financial advice, please speak to an advisor. This is about information. We are hoping to inform you about the main issues affecting your investment with us, explain how we're managing that impact, and share with you our insight of what's going to happen next. And talking about what's happening, hot off the press, Mark, RBNZ today has cut interest rates by half of 1%, or as we say, 50 basis points. This was largely priced in by markets, I think just a little bit over 50 they were pricing in. Where are central banks at with cracking inflation and helping economies to grow? And maybe you can finish off on New Zealand, where all the data I've been seeing recently suggests we're struggling a bit.
Yeah, that's right. Obviously, RBNZ delivering that half a point cut today. And other central banks around the world are also cutting rates, right? Mm. We're seeing cuts in the US, in Europe, in the UK as well. And so central banks are basically signaling that the happy inflation is coming down, but the job's not quite done. Mm-hmm. So while they're cutting rates, they're also saying, well, we still think we're exerting some restraint on activity, right? Because interest rates are higher than they would be at a neutral level, yeah, if you like. No one knows where that neutral level is, but central banks think they're currently high, but need to reduce it slowly as inflation gets down towards target. It's not the same all over the world, right? Inflation rates are generally higher than they need to be, but there's varying degrees of stickiness, shall we say. It looks at the moment like there's most stickiness in the US, right? So expectations of cuts by the US central bank have moderated a bit, right? Mm-hmm. They're expected to cut less aggressively, yep, over coming months. Other places, like in Europe, for example, inflation coming down a lot faster, growth weakening, the ECB probably going to be delivering more cuts. In Australia, there's no cuts happening because they never hiked rates as far in the first place, and inflation hasn't come down. So they can't cut rates in Australia. But in New Zealand, inflation has started to fall. As the RBNZ noted, it's kind of towards the middle of its band, which is where I would like to keep it. And that warranted a half point cut today.
Yep. And you were listening a couple of hours ago, because I know you were eager on that. And what's the flight path looking from here? And was he positive? Was he dovish? Or was he a bit hawkish but negative?
I think more to come, for sure, right? How much and how fast is a little bit harder to answer. You know, we've got 3 months now almost until the next meeting in February.
Yeah.
So it's a long time and not a huge amount of information, because we don't get a lot of data over that period. But it's more likely than not that we'll get another half point in February.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Now, interest rates are pretty important when it comes to investing. So when rates fall, what typically happens to bond prices and share prices? Are we seeing that happening now? And how do we manage the impact, say, for example, on our fixed interest holdings or those shares, which are particularly sensitive to interest rate movements?
Yeah. Well, so we can say from a bond perspective, there's a direct link between interest rates and bond prices.
Yeah.
So when interest rates fall, bond prices go up. And remember, we're invested in bonds. So when bond prices go up, we're delivering performance. You're also getting returns from those bonds because they pay a coupon or a yield, if you like. So even if the price doesn't change, you can still get a return out of your bond. But it's the fluctuation of interest rates that are really causing some movements in bonds. Remember, 2-3 years ago, interest rates were rising around the world quite sharply, and bond prices were falling commensurately quite sharply as well. And that was a headwind to bond performance, particularly for lower risk funds that invest heavily in bonds. But over the last year, interest rates have been falling at the front end of what central banks are doing, they're cutting interest rates. But what's important for bond prices is, what does the market think the path of interest rates is going forward? And that's changing all the time. And what we've seen is broadly a fluctuation in interest rate expectations over the last year. It's been higher, it's been lower, but it's been in a fairly wide range, and that's causing some volatility. Right. That's not a bad thing, because we can capture that volatility. When there's too many expectations of interest rate cuts, we can, you know, reduce some exposure. And when there's not many expectations of interest rate cuts, we can increase our exposure again. Right. So we can, as an active manager, deliver value from investing in more or less bonds at various points, depending on market pricing.
Shares?
Shares are a bit harder. Some shares are very sensitive, particularly utility companies. Think something like Contact Energy, right? Other shares, like growth company shares, are less directly sensitive to interest rates, and over a short period can be completely immune, right? So it's a mixed bag. Broadly speaking, when interest rates go down, you would expect shares more broadly to increase. And I think that's broadly what's happened. The market's been quite excited about interest rate cuts. Obviously, that, you know, alleviates fears around slowing economic growth. That increased optimism is good for shares.
Yep.
And we've seen a rally in share prices.
Yeah. And if I think about New Zealand compared to the UK or Australia or other markets, it's got quite a proportion of shares that are quite sensitive to interest rates.
Yes, more broadly, the shares in New Zealand are quite sensitive to interest rates. So as we see those cuts come through, that should provide some support to those shares.
Good.
Just carry on the theme of the share markets. I mean, you said before that the US economy's been very strong, hasn't been the same everywhere though, and so has the US share market. We've seen an extraordinary year of returns from US shares. So what's been happening there and why?
Yeah, so I guess we have to cast our mind back 12 months, right? Because we're recapping what shares have done. So, you know, where were we 12 months ago? Well, at that point in time, interest rates had gone up a lot, right? Normally what happens when interest rates go up a lot is the economy falters, right? Because that's what central banks are trying to do.
Yep.
And yet in the intervening period, the last 12 months, we've seen economic growth in the US, you know, close to 3%, right? And pretty consistent, and driven by a very strong consumer.
Yeah.
So that wasn't expected. Right. And so the growth outlook has been better than expected. That growth has been delivered by high incomes. Right? Employment market's been very strong. Wage growth has been coming through. So household incomes are strong. It's been driven by a wealth effect. Those same rises in share prices makes people feel wealthier, because in the US in particular, lots of people are invested in shares. Right. So when they're feeling wealthier, they go out and spend more. Right. And so it's been a good year for the US economy, right? And it stood out as a head and shoulders, you know, banner year for the US economy versus other economies around the world, right? Europe has been sluggish, resilient but sluggish. UK, resilient but sluggish. China's been outright weak, to be fair. Australia's been reasonable. And New Zealand, as we talked about, you know, has struggled a little bit under the weight of those interest rates that we've had. But the US share market, you know, it's delivered good earnings, right? Mm-hmm. AI mm-hmm. has been a thing yep. this year. Lots of people are very enthusiastic about that. NVIDIA, the poster child, mm-hmm. delivering mm-hmm. earnings growth for the market in general. And so that's been a positive this year. But the performance of the market has been way in excess of that earnings growth, right? I.e. people have been willing to buy shares up a level, you know, above and beyond what the earnings have delivered. Yep. So the valuations of shares have gone up,
yep.
right?
Yep. And that's flowed through to some very good fund performance in the last 12 months. So if we look across our range of funds, be it the KiwiSaver funds, our investment funds, or our wealth management DIMS portfolios, you know, returns in the range of 5% through to 26%, I think, for the Global Equity mm. Fund. So that's been very good. Do we expect that to continue? Is that unusual? Well, you know, what's the outlook on returns?
If we cast the mind back a year ago and look what 1 year returns were then, right? They were low single digits for most of our funds, right? And we have lots of people were calling saying, what's going on? Well, you know, where are the returns? Mm-hmm. We were obviously having lots of headwinds from falling bond prices, and shares were, you know, equally kind of mediocre. And then there's been this roaring, you know, rally in shares, and bonds have gone nowhere. So there's not been that headwind in place. It's really hard to predict when these things happen, but we've enjoyed it nonetheless, yep. right? And we've seen performance from, you know, all of our funds, right? Not just the growth funds, but, you know, conservative funds portfolios have delivered, you know, plus 10% or more in the last 12 months. So it's been a really good period. You know, it's tough to expect the same again, even if our outlook is kind of fairly reasonable still.
Yeah, but over time, you know, you have very strong years and you have your not so strong years, and over time things sort of even out. So
yes, that's right.
We should expect returns to moderate from here.
Yeah, all else being equal. Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, you can't predict with a high degree of certainty, but given where we're at, maybe we can come on to an outlook later, but it's hard to expect a repeat of what we've just done.
Yeah, for sure.
And Mike, let's stay with performance for a moment. Just talk some of the detail of us, Milford. I'd also like you to talk through, for a firm like us, we pride ourselves on making money for our clients during downturns. What happens when there aren't any downturns? You know, if you look at this year, early in the summer, concerns about the US economy, or was it a recession? Nope, powered on. Then a bit later on, concerns about geopolitics. Oh, powers on. Mm. And it just kept powering on. You know, what happens when there aren't any downturns for a while?
Yeah, it's in some ways it's been quite an abnormal period, right? In that you don't often get periods when shares go up in, you know, a straight line with no volatility, right? No, downturns, if you like. There's typically always some form of volatility, even in a bull market, right?
Yep.
And we just haven't had that this year, right? So for us as a manager who likes to try and focus on risk, right? Mm. We have one eye on risk as well as return, right?
Yep.
It means that, you know, we have to play the game of trying to keep up yep. with markets that are running, and valuations have gone up. Like I said, they weren't cheap to start with,
nope.
But they've gone up and they're now quite expensive, right? And so we recognize that, and so that makes it difficult for us to try and, you know, manage risk, because there is risks and rising risk when valuations go up.
Yeah.
But you know, we all want to enjoy these strong performances that we've got, so we're trying to capture those. And there are ways that we can do that. You know, stock picking. We can use derivatives in our funds to try and capture upside, with giving us a kind of strong ability to kind of manage any volatility that comes through should it arrive.
Yep. Thanks.
And so given we've had this perfect storm of good news, we've had great economic growth, we've had strong company earnings, we've had central banks cutting interest rates, share markets have reacted very strongly to that. How long do you think that's going to last? I mean, is it sustainable?
Yeah, the world's changing, right? And we can come to the election. Donald Trump in the US clearly is a bit of a watershed moment in terms of the outlook, and it's going to impact on how things go. Going forward, and putting that aside, more broadly, we've got, like you said, central banks cutting interest rates, right? And that is a support to economies. It's going to cushion the economy, so that means the outlook is improving, right? Because you've seen those interest rates cuts coming through. So even if we get economic growth that's weaker than expected, there's plenty of room for central banks to cut rates further, right? At the moment, markets expect them to be cut to some form of neutral, which may be, you know, 0.5, 1, 2% below where we are now. But of course, they can go even further than that should we see shocks emerge and general economic weakness turn up. So that kind of, gives us some conviction that the things can continue, certainly from an economic growth perspective, right? And then it's about translating, well, you know, what does that economic growth mean for performance of shares? It means that we're likely to get more profit growth, right? So companies are likely to harness that economic growth and deliver more earnings, right? Mm. So that's not something to be too concerned about, which then leaves the kind of fairly intangible valuation piece. And valuations are high. Normally, over very long run periods, you tend to get mean reversion in valuations. So our valuations can moderate. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean to say that assets or shares have to go down, but it might mean they go sideways for a period while earnings are reasonable. And we get a flat market, which actually wouldn't be a bad thing because we think we could pick stocks in that environment and try and deliver performance above and beyond that, right? Yep. Or we might get other scenarios where, you know, valuations can go even higher, and they have been higher, and we get, kind of a bubble-like market environment, yeah, which we're kind of on the cusp of, but not really there yet, just at this moment.
Yeah. Okay.
And you said Trump earlier, playbook's out, big talk, be a few months before things get into business. What's our view of the election outcome, and do we have a particular view on particular sectors, and maybe a bit of commentary on that old chestnut, the debt ceiling?
Yes. So look, Trump's elected. I think it's pretty clear what he stands for. It's a kind of pro-America policy. And so some of that is standalone pro-America, right? So thinking about things like deregulation, right? Elon Musk's this, have been appointed this czar of, getting rid of government waste. And so if you get productivity gains in the US economy, again, that lends itself to good US economic growth. That's fine. But some of the policies are clearly, pro-America at the expense of the rest of the world, right? And, if we cast our minds back to the previous Trump administration, tariffs were a big thing. He's tariff man. And already we've seen comments from him around tariffs. Now, they are a risk, right? If tariffs go on, they can really, impact on global trade. They can impact negatively on not just global consumers, but US consumers, because they raise the price of goods in the US. The market can look through them if they think that they're a bit of a stick, a negotiating tactic, if you like. And so, if tariffs are enacted and then withdrawn a month later, then no big issue. If tariffs are enacted and then keep getting ratcheted up, then that could be a problem. So it's something that we're concerned about, but we need to see it happen before we get too concerned. So you give them the benefit of the doubt from here. Yeah. You mentioned debt ceiling. It comes up every few years in the US.
Yes.
It's due again in January.
Yeah.
This time around, it's not going to be a problem because the Republicans hold all three branches of government.
True. Yep.
So they're not going to argue with themselves about raising the debt ceiling. They'll just raise it. So no issue there.
Yeah. And the different sectors, any particular sectors we're thinking post-Trump that...
Yeah, there's clear,
better and worse.
Yeah, that's a good question, because there are some clear implications for sectors. One negative would be healthcare, right? One implication of reduced government spending is reduced government spending on healthcare. He's made it very clear that he wants to bring down the cost of healthcare in the US. So, less government money flowing to healthcare providers is a headwind for that sector. You would expect some domestic cyclicals to do reasonably well. These are companies that are more tied to the domestic economy. Yep. And then one sector that has been really strong and we've been playing is the banks, right? Banks are a very heavily regulated industry. And if you've got the tide going out on regulations, then banks should be freer to go about their business and make money. So we've been invested in companies like JP Morgan, yep, Bank of America, yep, in the US, and they've performed very, very well.
Yeah, good, 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 good. Now, I think let's look at the outlook and some rapid fire comments from you maybe, and we'll back and forth with different topics. So what's our view, outlook, interest rates from here?
So interest rates going down, right? Which is great for the economy, especially locally, where, you know, New Zealand interest rates have been weighing on activity here, right? So we need those to come through and mortgage rates to fall. So great. For the market, it's more relevant what long-term interest rates do.
Okay.
So they're tied a little bit to the front, you know, to what central banks are doing, but it's more about market expectations. Long-term interest rates have been rising in the last couple of months.
Yep.
And they've been rising because governments around the world keep spending money, right? And if they keep spending money, they've got to borrow money.
Yep.
And that kind of weighs on bonds because they're issuing lots of bonds to kind of spend that money.
Yep.
And so there is a risk that if growth is high, inflation remains sticky, and governments are spending lots of money still, that long-term interest rates will go up, right? And if they go up quickly or too far, that could be a problem. So it's, again, it's another risk that we're looking at, and it's something that we're monitoring on a day-to-day basis in our funds.
Yep. And then the leap quickly to investing in bonds in that case?
Yep. So our bonds that we're investing in are typically shorter in nature. So they're kind of, you know, 1, 2, 3 years rather
Makes
than
sense.
5,
yep.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, because less sensitive to the long-term interest rates, but sensitive to those short-term interest rates that are falling.
And the flip side of that, shares. So what's the expectation for shares and favoured markets looking forward?
Yeah, so I talked about the US share market, and that's been fantastic. It is pretty expensive, right? So it can continue to rally. So those earnings expectations are pretty strong, especially given the policies that the Trump administration seems to be putting in place. But those high valuations do temper our enthusiasm a little bit. So in this environment, we've got to try and scratch around and look for cheaper stocks, right? Luckily, there are some. And the UK has been somewhere that we've been increasing our focus of investment. It has been typically, you know, underappreciated as a market. It's been kind of unloved. The whole Brexit debacle, you know, has been something that's weighed on the UK market. And basically, no one's there, right? Which is a good thing, because it means that if people start looking at it again, like we are, then there is lots of upside. So it's cheap. And it's under-owned. And we think there are catalysts in place to allow the UK share market to perform. And those catalysts are much the same as in New Zealand, interest rate cuts. Inflation should start to moderate in the UK. Bank of England should cut interest rates. That will improve valuations of shares, and we should see performance there, and also improve the fate of the UK economy. So we're dealing with this problem of high valuations in shares across the world by trying to find cheaper ones in the UK. We've been doing that. And so that kind of improves our outlook, because, you know, better returns from cheaper valuations.
Yep.
And then, you know, within the US, it's about kind of managing some of those exposures, you know, trying to be in those sectors that we think can have, you know, relatively improved prospects, like the financials.
Yep.
In New Zealand, you know, weaker, lower interest rates should be a benefit. You know, we're heavily invested in contact energy still, because we think that can deliver good, solid, risk-adjusted returns. As interest rates fall, Spark's a relatively new investment that we've been making. You know, that company's kind of struggled a little bit, but we've now just started making some heavy investments there, because we think the outlook for that company is going to be less bad going forward and hopefully improve. And another winner on the local market has been Infratil, which has been a fantastic investment over the last year, and we're still there on that one.
And one of the benefits of an active manager is that we can tilt our overweights and underweights, so tilting towards the undervalued countries and economies and sectors, and reducing exposure to the more expensive ones.
Yeah, that's right.
Didn't you touch on Oz? You haven't mentioned Oz.
And the Aussie market has been performing very well as well. The banks have done quite well there. We've enjoyed performance there. There's been some good stock picks. Goodman Group has been it's been linked to data centers, which obviously with the AI boom has been a very, very hot area of investment, and the performance of the shares of that company has been very strong. So we have harnessed some good returns out of Australia as well.
And the outlook, what do we think?
Yeah, I mean, again, Australian market is quite expensive. Broadly speaking, it doesn't deliver a lot of overall profits. But, you know, we've got a big team on the ground there, unearthing kind of some good companies that have got good growth prospects. And so we think we can deliver some reasonable returns, even if the broader market looks quite expensive.
Yep.
And what about the currency? Well, we've seen our currency weaken, you know, since August, reasonably significantly against the US in particular. So what's our outlook there, and how are we managing that?
Yeah, so currency is really important for us. We can take currency positions that are different to where we're invested, right? So just because we're investing more in the US doesn't mean we have to take the US dollar currency position. We think about it very separately. We're active managers. We do fluctuate our position in currencies, and we've been doing that all year. Currencies tend to be volatile, but not trending. And so that gives you, plenty of chance to buy and sell if you can do that effectively. And we've been typically short or underweight the New Zealand dollar, quite heavily so. Some of that's been against the Australian dollar, where it has weakened a little bit, and we think it's got further to go. And against the US dollar, where we've been, very overweight US dollars. And underweight New Zealand dollar. So again, that's been a really good position to have. Yep. With the weakness that we've seen, we have started to moderate that position a touch because, it's run a long way and these things don't, say, trend in one direction forever. New Zealand dollar tends to be a bit stronger into the end of the year. So wary of that factor as well. And again, we're highly active and playing those trends and those turns in trends through the currency.
So another lever that we can pull alongside the asset exposure.
That's right.
Yeah. Good.
And talking of levers, there's also another lever. I don't know how much our clients appreciate that we're able to use derivatives, both in terms of ensuring downside, but also upside. So earlier, pardon me, you said valuations are high, but they've kept going, right? I mean, what are we doing to capture further upside, given that you said we're a bit worried about risk? Don't want to take too much risk. How are we managing that? How are we maneuvering?
So our investment process from a top down perspective takes the temperature of investors, right? How exuberant are people feeling, right? How optimistic is everyone feeling about the outlook? You're kind of more confident in taking a lot of risk when everyone's despondent and very pessimistic about the outlook, because that might improve, right? When everyone's very excited about the outlook and valuations are high and everyone thinks this can go on forever, that's when you start to be a little bit more cautious. That said, we still want to miss out on gains.
Yep.
So we have to find ways to try and do that. And some of the ways we can do that is via derivatives.
Yeah.
So, it's going into a bit of the weeds of this, but call options effectively allow us to pay a fixed premium to get exposure to upside in share markets. If the share market rallies, then we'll have exposure. If it falls, then all we lose is that premium that we pay. It's a bit like insurance, right?
Yep.
And so we've been doing that in our diversified funds to try and maintain exposure, particularly to US shares, to allow us to capture any rallies, but hopefully, avoid falls should they come.
Yep, which again is another lever.
Yeah.
So yeah,
that's
okay.
Right.
So that's good. So what we've done is we've looked at rates, we've looked at bonds, we've looked at shares across different countries, we've looked at currency, and we've looked at how we can include protection in terms of possible upside or downside.
Yep.
So in terms of what we're doing, in terms of the outlook, that pretty much is the whole range of activities that we've covered. Now, at the start, I mentioned that Murray and I would like to get you thinking about a few things over the summer. A break is a really good time to review your goals and plans for your finances, whether you're accumulating for the long term, whether you've got a specific short-term goal in mind, whether you're in that 10 years pre-retirement stage, or whether you're actually using your assets in retirement. These are all pretty distinct periods. And whatever age you're listening to this broadcast, we'd encourage you to think about those different and separate parts as specific goal periods for how you're going to manage to protect and grow your wealth and accumulate your assets. Murray, do you want to share some thoughts on what you'd like our clients to be thinking about, those who are in early stage accumulation?
Yeah, well, that accumulation phase is really important. And the earlier you start, the better, because you've got the benefit of the power of compounding returns, right? So I don't know how many 20-year-olds are listening this evening, but if there aren't many, maybe the parents and grandparents could pass this message on, because the earlier you start, the better. So just as an example, I went to our online calculator on our website, and any viewers can do this, or direct your loved ones towards that, and you can run your own figures and just see what they might look like for you. But I ran the figures for a 20-year-old with the average KiwiSaver balance today of $35,000. Let's say they're working, earning the average wage of $65,000. They're in a growth fund contributing 3%. By the time they get to age 65, assuming they haven't taken money out for a first home deposit, they'll have $475,000 towards their retirement savings, which is a reasonable amount of money, nearly $500,000 to enjoy in retirement. Now, if they delay that saving until they're 40, and a lot of people do that, a lot of young people say, why would I start saving now? You know, they're enjoying life and spending up and traveling and doing all those great things. And people think about starting to save for retirement later when in their 40s. If you wait till you're 40, instead of $475,000 using those same parameters, you end up with a balance of $207,000. And if you delay just five more years to 45, you end up with $160,000. That's a significant difference. So really the message is the earlier you start, the better. So start early, be disciplined. And if you're not sure, get some advice.
Yeah, excellent. And that's the accumulation stage. And we see a lot of clients and then they get to 10 years before retirement, which for most people is around about 55, 56. That's the phase in your life when you should have a reasonably good idea of the assets you will have accumulated by the time you get to 65. You've also got a period, albeit short, to boost and fine-tune the areas that you need to. So I think it's important to have a realistic assessment during that time period. So if you're in that age group, I'd encourage you to start thinking about, so where do I think I'm going to end up? And what are the things I might need to do? And as Murray said, come and talk to us and get some advice if you need to. But it's really important to have a plan of how you're going to end up at that stage when you're ready to use the assets. And then, of course, there's the next stage, which is how am I going to use those assets? So I think being really aware of that time period, it's quite important to think ahead to that and think, you know, when you're 65, if you go onto the NZ statistics website, you can key in your age and it'll give you what the current life expectancy is, right? So if you're turning 65 this year, your life expectancy for a man is 86 and for a woman is 88. So a couple of things to take from that. So at 65, I'm planning for a 20-year time period. I'm going to say at least, because of course, the second point I'd say is those life expectancy numbers, they're averages. Even when you go into the NZ stats, they'll give you three numbers. So I think the thing to think about is, well, my spread of time frame is probably anywhere between 20 to 32 years, depending on my health, my family history, and a range of other factors. So I think for individuals in that group, I'd really be encouraging you to think about that long term and think about what that means. And for a lot of our clients, that means some really good cash flow modeling. You really can't fault a bit of cash flow modeling. And you know, New Zealand superannuation is universal and provides a lifetime income, which is great. But if you look at studies that are out there, such as Mass University, what they say is most households spend a lot more than you get in New Zealand superannuation. Mm. So thinking about the savings and the investments you're going to have at that age and then modeling what that looks like is really important. Modeling your regular, irregular, and understanding the different phases of spending in that retirement period too. Because, you know, as we know in the industry, there are typically three phases. I mean, some people call them the go-go period, when everyone's spending a lot of money and they're traveling. There's this thing called a bucket list and everyone's ticking it off. They're visiting family because they've cleared off to Australia or to London or wherever they go. And that's the go-go period. And then after a while, you've got your mid-retirement period. People call it the slow-go period. And then your pattern of spending changes. It's all about understanding that and the differences. And then what we typically see in the sorry about this, but people call it the no-go period. And that's where actually spending could tick up because of health and care costs. So it's really what we'd like you to do is whichever of those three broad periods you're in, to please have a think about what your financial plan is. And if in the new year you've come back from a break and you're feeling energized, please come and talk to us about what we can do to help.
Mm. You mentioned the Massey survey. You know, they've done some very good research about what it does cost to live in retirement. If you live in a city, a metropolitan area, and you want a choices retirement, which most people want, a few choices, right? Because that's what you think about, you dream about all those years you work, you want to be doing travel and, you know, socializing and maybe playing golf and all those things. you need between $600,000 and $1 million to live on top of your New Zealand super. And look, we don't want to scare people with those figures because $1 million is a lot of money. But, you know, to my example earlier, that was just somebody contributing 3%. If you contribute a little bit more, that accumulates even faster, and then you've got your compounding on top. Yep. So actually $1 million is very achievable in terms of a retirement goal. But yeah, get some advice and start early, Rich. Yep.
Thanks. Okay, so while we have been talking about the last year, we do remind you, of course, that it's important to think long-term for investing and really trusting the process for the best long-term results. You've probably heard us say this before, it's never a smooth line and it's never a straight line. There'll be strong periods, as Murray and Mark mentioned, there'll be weaker periods. We ask you to view them as a whole and look at them over the long term. That change in price or that volatility is actually the price we all pay for better long-term returns, but you do have to stay in to win. Now, please have a plan or a goal, and if not already, we invite you to assess our tools that we have available or talk to our team, whether that's to identify, am I in the right fund for me, what goal that you should have, or if you want a more in-depth wealth management conversation, you can speak to one of our advisors in Auckland, Wellington, Christchurch, Cambridge, Tauranga, and from next year, have a look north as we'll be opening a new office to service our many clients in the Hawke's Bay. Whatever you are doing over Christmas and the new year, we hope you have a restful and enjoyable time. Our offices will close between the end of business on Christmas Eve until Monday, the 6th of January, 2025. Our staff who will be working will be contactable by email, by phone, and by video call on the business days during that period. From me, it's thank you for investing with Milford. Thank you for joining us. And we look forward to helping you protect and grow your investments with us next year. Murray.
Thanks, Phil. And look, we will be back next year with more of these broadcast events. So keep an eye on your inbox for invites to those. Of course, a reminder, you can contact us at any time if you have any questions. Just send an email through to info@milfordasset.com or contact your usual advisor. Now, just an important health warning here. At this time of year, scams become a lot more prevalent. We are aware of a scam currently that is live that uses the Milford branding and some Milford staff and includes a Heartland bond offer. That is a scam. Please be careful and please be aware of that. There is some information on the homepage of our website. So I recommend you go there, click on the link and just have a look at some information we've put together to help keep you safe over the holiday period, but in fact, over any period. As I said, scams are becoming more and more prevalent and we please want you to be very careful. And just a reminder, we'll never reach out to you with an individual investment offer to you as an individual or ask you for things like your password or personal information about your investment. So be aware of that and be very cautious, particularly on email. Just a reminder that we are a staff-owned firm. We invest alongside you, and we very much appreciate you investing with us. Thank you for trusting us with your hard-earned funds. And just add my best wishes alongside Phil's to you and your families over the Christmas and New Year break. Thank you for tuning in this evening. Thank you for watching. It's good night from me, and it's good night from them.
Good night.
Good night.